If you see something, say something. At Reply, weird things come with any weird story you find on the web, and you can help make weirdthings.com even weirder.
Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
And we are live.
What happens now?
I think what you do is, I forgot
what happened. Normally what happened is nobody talked about doing the show and then we didn't. So now it's going to be different.
And the starting.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Weird Things podcast starring Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Hello, beautiful people. You look as beautiful as we left you.
Mr. Justin Robert Young.
Well, Brian, welcome to NSFW show. This is going to be a really great... Wait, hold on. There's another show that we do?
There is.
And I'm Andrew Main.
Ah, feels good to be back.
It does. In many ways, the Weird Things podcast never left us.
Except for when it did.
So I was racing over here to be able to do this, and it took me 6 months to get here, apparently. I saw on the back of a Jeep, I saw a bumper sticker that said, "Let's get weird," right, as I was pulling in. I'm like, ah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's great.
It's nice. Obviously a sign because, you know, we believe in those things here, right?
God, I'm so excited.
So
it's a thing. Can we say definitively that we can't say why there was a break in the podcast?
Well, I mean, Andrew was on assignment.
Scheduling, yes. The Monkey Island research project, some other stuff, you know.
Let's just say he went to L.A. and he has really, really, really looked for Monkey Island.
Yes. There's been a lot of real intensive research.
It's like he starts showing us this scrabbling notebook with its like lines and equations and there's threads going everywhere.
I think I really wanted you to say he went to L.A. and boy, are his arms really, really, really tired.
You know what? If you don't have a story, I actually have something I want to
throw out. I got stories for days, Brian, but I want you to go lead off.
Well, I'm gonna have to look at my Twitter feed because I tweeted it earlier today. But somebody posted.
This is going great. We're in mid-season form right now.
as good as we've ever been.
Kraken moment research.
No. I have a list of stuff, and I'm like, oh, let me pull up the article because. I could start it off really vague, or do I want to do it where it's like I actually know what the heck
I just want to plug this article on Ars Technica.
I saved that for later. I wanted to read that.
It's titled The Life and Death of Buran, the USSR Shuttle Built on Faulty Assumptions. And it was so weird because I remembered hearing about the Russian space shuttle, and you saw pictures of it, and it pretty much looked exactly like the American space shuttle. And it apparently flew only once and was unmanned as it flew. But the whole thing was built because when the Russians were crunching the numbers, they're all like, why on earth is this space shuttle being built by the Americans with so much payload space? And what they figured was they assumed that the only reason they could think of is to put military satellites up into space, into orbit, test them out, and then bring them back home, make repairs, and then send it back up again. And in so doing, create, you know, a battle fortress in space to give them superior. So they built their version of it.
Well, that was actually, Brian, the second thing. The first thing was to carry much borscht. That's what they assumed. If you were going to build a space shuttle, you carry borscht to space because there is no borscht in space. They're like, well, aside from that, it's this space satellite.
I can't even remember the name of our Russian warehouse runner. There's so many characters from the Weird Things universe that I can't access.
So many weird identical Russian accents from there.
But it's a fascinating read talking about how they built it and where the decision came from to essentially model it on the research, you know, because NASA was very public about the design and the reasons that they had built the shuttle, you know, because in some ways it was, you know, a big PR blitz for NASA. And so what they borrowed from it and why ultimately, you know, they just flew it once and then never did anything with it. It eventually, actually, do you know where it is now? It spent time in a warehouse until the warehouse fell in disrepair and the roof collapsed in on it, destroying it. So, like, that's its ignoble ending.
Sad.
The roof is collapsing.
I was curious because I started doing some research on De Buran when they announced, you know, SpaceX with the Falcon Heavy and trying to find out what was the heaviest launcher system. And Buran was, I think, the last big heavy system that they used for launching.
I don't want to steal the thunder of the article, but Ars Technica is a good one.
Yeah. Well, Brian, Justin.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, I want you to imagine that you're knocking on the door of Justin's house.
I can only imagine that because
he's run afoul. The neighbors have known that something's up. People have been suspicious. And now there is quite a clamor going on because something Justin is doing is done.
Okay, so I've got a problem with something that Justin, knock, yeah. Knock, knock.
Hi, Brian.
Justin, listen.
I'm gonna text Justin what he's doing. Okay.
All right.
Okay. This is interesting. A new little twist, ladies and gentlemen.
Bring, bring.
Wait, hold on. Somebody's calling. Yes, hello?
Brian, you get out of that Justin's house. I don't trust that boy. You need to get on down back to home. You're supposed to take the trash out.
I'm talking to him right now about that thing, Bonnie. Jeez. Look, we've talked about it. The whole town's upset about it. Listen, Justin.
He's up to no good.
Or like the invisible nag. Jeez.
Nay. Justin, listen. The whole town, we need to talk to you about what you've been up to.
To talk to you about getting off my face.
Okay, all right. I understand you don't want to make a big scene, but just explain to us, like, why. Just tell, why are you doing this?
How about this one, Brian? Compassion. Compassion's why I do it. Because I have a heart where the rest of you people just want to have a Holocaust on your hands.
Now, okay, well, and do you feel like this is an appropriate level of noise?
The noise is not my concern. the good that I am doing to literally save lives is what is paramount to me.
Well, okay.
Noise is man's concern. This is a cause that is above that.
Okay, but do you feel, is it a lot of noise?
I mean, like, there's really, I don't know why, yeah, it's a really poor, you know, it's a poor choice of words, because I don't think that there's a lot of noise.
Huh. Okay.
Like physical noise. Again, I mean, maybe the grinding gears of a broken society that leaves such tenderness to wither and die. Maybe that's the noise you're hearing.
Brian.
Okay. Yeah, yes. Oh, wait, ring. Yes, sweethearts.
Work hard in silence and let your success be the noise.
What the? I'm not answering this phone again. listen, okay. On a spiritual level, you feel like this is a good thing for everyone.
Brian, it's not a good thing. It's the only thing.
So you're spiritually in a good place, but physically, are you exhausted?
I mean, there is a personal sacrifice to be a man who cares like I do.
Okay, but you say you care, but who do you care about? You keep saying you care. Who do you care about?
I care about who I'm protecting.
Well, and who is that? Who are you protecting?
I think you know.
All of society?
I mean, they're certainly part of society. They have their own societies, a society that's beautiful and rich that you can't comprehend.
Well, okay, but they're not human, though.
No. I mean, if you want to just get racist about it, then fine. Sure, we can start drawing these lines, Brian.
I mean, are you in love? Is that
they're
is that...
more human? I'm in love with the world. I'm in love with not letting hundreds of souls go to heaven for no reason.
Are you? How? Now we're on the outside. But seriously, do you believe that they have souls?
Jesus loves the little children. Sorry, Brian, I just lapsed into my hymnals.
Are these big or small souls?
Some are big. Some
like
are small.
Big?
Some are medium.
How?
Some are silly. Some are shy. Some are industrious. Some are mean. Some are nice.
Are you having sex with animals in this house?
Number one, absolutely not. No.
What are you doing?
I'm certainly not having sex with them.
Oh, so it is animals then.
I mean, again, if you want to draw these really unfair...
I mean, at
lines.
Least tell me they're mammals.
Swing low, sweet chariot. Sorry, Brian. I think of the suffering that these beings are going through, and I just have to lapse.
Wait, now you say they're suffering. Why are they suffering?
Because people like you, white people like you, want to take them away and murder them.
Are they mice?
And leave them to die. No, Brian. Those I kill with abandon.
Are they rats?
No. Those might also happen to die here and again. They are vermin and deserve to be eradicated.
Now, what makes these creatures different?
Their beautiful face.
Wait, they have a face. They have a
beautiful... they have a way of looking at the world that when you're talking to one, you're like, man, I didn't see that coming. You have a really good point.
hang on. My wife just called and she wants to talk to you. Here, let me just hand the phone over to her.
Hello?
I am so angry that you hung up on me.
Brian, I think this one's still for you.
You didn't have any questions or disturbing the ruckus?
I'm just curious.
Yeah.
If these souls
mm-hmm.
are made of porcelain.
No, okay. They're not.
I think part of the angle that makes this interesting is also the profession of this man.
Oh
yes.
Yeah. What are you doing? So, don't you got a job?
Yeah.
So here's the thing, Brian. You're his boss going over because maybe he's been working on disability or not working but doing disability, and you're a little suspicious of what's going on. And then you go to his house and you find out, whoa! Not only are you not doing your job, you're doing the opposite of your job.
Is this guy like? Is he an exterminator?
No, Brian, there's just apparently between me and you, my white boss, we have a differing version of the word control.
So you're a pest control, right? You're supposed to be doing pest control.
No, Brian, we are here to protect, which is what I think control means. Animals.
So, all right.
Animals are involved.
You're collecting. How many? You have cats?
Is this like a tech? Are these cats?
No.
Gone wrong?
Cats are gross, and they bring apart. And they suck the souls out of babies' mouths.
Are they possums?
No.
Are they raccoons?
No. What are you, a freak show? Who collect those?
What sound does the fox
make? You asked a question earlier, and you got an evasion, which if you realized you were getting an evasion, you would be doing a different line of inquiry.
Oh, man. Wait, are they mammals?
No.
Jesus loves all the
ones. Are they snakes?
They made me a better person. I've learned a different language.
Brian hit it. They're snakes.
Oh my God, he is.
So I've been learning parcel tongue.
I got it just as you when you said the language thing. How many snakes does this guy have?
850 little darling angels.
Turnella, he is a wildlife animal control officer who was on disability. And see, people were a little bit suspicious. They did an investigation of disability because they thought maybe he's working. What's he doing? Whatever. They go to his house and they find out that he has one. He's got a side business selling snakes, and they find out illegal ones, Burmese pythons, etc. And he's got 850 snakes in his house.
Oh my God!
How can you...
like, and they're all like in tanks or just grooving in a big old nest.
I have a feeling you got 850 snakes. Not all of them are going to be in tanks. Some of them are going to be.
Listen, those ones go where they want.
How do you count 850 snakes? It seems like they.
Well, you start with one.
Ooh, oh,
wow. Really, Brian?
He's just sitting there. I think you got a phone call.
So I thought, like, it's like they're like, hey, listen, Richard, you had one job. One job.
Yes.
Animal control. 850 snakes. In illegal varieties in your house, you failed. You failed at this.
Can we talk about just the kind of people that get into animal control? Because I think you need to be a certain kind of person to want it. Like, it's not like somebody who's a janitor becomes an animal control officer. Like, I think I feel like it's a very specific personality type. And on, like, the bad end of that personality type, this is in no way surprising.
Well, I guess they tend to be, I would assume, as youngsters, like, you know, they like to catch critters, right? If you're somebody who likes to catch critters, then you're probably somebody who also likes to hold or keep critters. I assume that he was doing all this.
I have to imagine Mayor Brushwood. We're looking for a few youngsters to catch critters in our neighborhood.
You little Johnny, you'd like to
catch critters.
You
like to get your hands around a little critter here and again? Come on down. We need animal control officers.
Okay, is this a case where it's like he just saw that, like, wow, man, we're just giving them, you know, people buy these and I'm just killing them. Like, was he supposed to be killing them or letting them go somewhere else?
We're not sure where all of them came from, but he seemed to be breeding them and trying to sell them. And he probably, maybe if he captured them, he was probably like, well, I got a place for this.
Well, I mean, like, yeah, if there are illegal, if the snakes that he had were illegal, then it stands to reason that as an animal control officer, it would be his job to dispose of the illegal snakes on some level, whether it be destroying them or getting them to somewhere else, you know,
yeah,
like just solving that problem, for which he did not do. He decided to exacerbate by breeding snakes and selling them to cocaine dealers.
It sounds like he's a crooked corrections officer, basically, where he's
Like that, I think, is a very good assumption.
What animal would be more shocking than snakes?
Well, great whites, because he'd be like, "How did you do it?" Like, I want to be the crazy neighbor with, like, the kids go, "Oh, we don't know what old man Maine's up to. Let's go take a peek. We see cattle going in there at night. We're not sure what's going on in there. We hear water splashing, and they peek through there, and there's a big shark tank and a great white, like, devouring, you know, an ox."
That would be freaking amazing. That would be like that's a sci-fi original movie waiting to happen.
Can I just interject why I was not a marine science major is the fact that my natural thing is I'm feeding a great white oxen.
Of course you are.
I was just like, whoa, wait, just, you know.
I don't like to object to it, but that'd be like, you know, I'm like,
maybe
that's
unhinging jaws as well. Is that what?
Like the Burmese python or whatever, yeah.
What'll it eat? What will Andrew's great white eat?
What will it eat?
This week's Weird Things is sponsored by the Executives Comedy Podcast at executiveshow.com.
hosted by Bryce Castillo, a.k.a. Nash Complex, of the White People Rich and Night Attack 2 Remix Infamy. The executives pitch and develop video games every week. From a Full House dating simulator to Kinect games for Pumpkin, Tumblr-related users who believe they were born to air pumps, to be air pumps. What? All right, whatever. They're doing that. There isn't a niche that they won't misrepresent slash exploit. You can find it on iTunes, RSS, YouTube, live recording links, and everything else at executivesshow.com. That is executives with an S, show.com. The executives are big Weird Things in chat room fans and are ecstatic to support such great content and wait to support it for months. Thanks, guys.
All right, so I have a Bonnie Bryan question.
Uh-oh.
It starts off with a real scenario, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And first, let me take you back a few months where we had there's a guy in Australia. He's out there with his friends. They're having a party, and he gets eaten by a croc, which kind of sucked. And then a little while later, a guy from New Zealand decides to go on a kayak trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's kayaking. He goes on an island. And part goes over to this little island. He's running low on supplies. But as he's trying to get to the bigger island, he sees a giant crocodile about 4 meters away from him. In an American, that's like 2 feet. He says, this is close. So he starts to go away. He goes to the smaller island to get away from the crocodile, goes ashore, and figures he'll wait it out, you know? Because it's like, all right, I'll just wait this out. I'll wait for the croc to get bored. Problem is, crocs don't have must-see TV, Netflix, or anything else to do with their goddamn time.
Right.
Most interesting thing to happen to this croc in weeks is happening right now.
He's like, oh, this looks fun. All right. They're kind of obsessive. And so one day goes by, croc's still there. Guy goes to sleep, wakes up, looks out there, and there's the croc surrounding the island. He's like, all right.
Where's he going to sleep? Because I mean, I could never fall asleep knowing that there's. I guess you could climb a tree. Crocs can't climb trees, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there used to be a tree climbing croc a long time ago, I think, according to a paleontologist friend. So like 3 days go by, and he's like, "All right." So he's kind of surviving. He's got a little bit of food or whatever like that. 4 days go by. This croc is not leaving him alone. It's out there. You know, every time he wants to go to the water and get away, there's the croc, this 18-foot crocodile, in scientific terms, is goddamn huge. Because remember, it's not just how long. These things are thick around.
They're huge.
And so 4 days goes by. He's trapped on this island. 5 days goes by. 6 days goes by. Poor bastard is there 2 weeks.
Just waiting for the croc to go?
Waiting for the croc to go. Finally, he tried to escape and send signals at passing planes and boats, but nobody stopped. And finally, a local resident spotted a light on the island and decided to investigate him, finds the guy, finds the guy, like, what's the matter? It's like, this guy's in a bigger boat. So
imagine what an asshole he feels like when they're like, oh, that's just Larry the croc. He's never hurt anyone. He's been detoothed.
Larry's going to have a first time. And in the typical Australian fashion, they didn't have any water on board. They gave this guy a beer.
Oh, that's amazing.
Nice.
So 2 weeks. 2 weeks trapped by a croc. So here we are. We have the brushwoods.
Okay, now, at some point, don't you just think like, well, I got to go at some point. That croc's never going to leave.
I think you're hoping to flag down help. So this is the question for you two. Bonnie and Brian decide to take a trip to Australia.
Yeah. Well, we've always wanted to go to it. Here we are, Bonnie. Finally made it.
Good day. Like,
let's go kayak.
Yeah, right? Why not?
Okay.
So, like, you're out there. Brian's got the zinc on his nose and maybe a little arm floaters and all that, Like,
Brian, you checked into it. This is safe, right? It's all good?
I'm like, it's fine.
I don't know the species around here.
This is actually frighteningly close to a real situation when we went to to Venezuela.
What
are you talking about? Brian's like drinking the big Australian beers and stuff. So
the oil can.
Buzz, and then you're like, oh, let's go to that. Bonnie's like, you hear that splash?
Yeah.
And Brian, you see it. You turn around and you see an 18-foot crocodile.
Okay.
And you see there's land in front of you.
Okay.
First, what?
So the first thing is just like, ah, they're just Crocs. They're okay. First of all, this is the real situation. Was when we went snorkeling in Venezuela, Bonnie didn't know that there's like barracuda all around, and barracuda, like they spread out. And nobody else seemed to care. And so I'm like, it's fine, whatever, America, they're going to leave you alone. And then, but she's like, I'm really uncomfortable with these. They're like, those barracudas, they're supposed to like be mean fish, aren't they? I'm like, yeah, I think, but I don't know. And then so to make Bonnie feel better, I start splashing at them, hoping to chase them away.
Yeah, really, really, really didn't like him antagonizing the local wildlife when we were in the water. Well, and also, and then I think he goes.
I think it was a barracuda, or maybe it was some other one. It was one of those surface floating ones. But
yeah,
anyway.
It was a barracuda. And my total freak out was when I looked out and I saw completely how evenly spaced they all were. I mean, they were totally
in formation.
They were in formation. They're completely evenly, like, I mean, you could measure it to
the one and a two.
And then I go, they're territorial. Oh my God. And then, yeah, so I was a little weirded out.
So that's, I'm going to sell you on the same line with this crocodile.
I mean, it worked that time too.
Poppy. So you're like, Brian, you're like, probably like, hey, Bronnie, let's go to this island. So you get to the island, and now you got the two of you on the island, and you're waiting for the croc to go away.
You're like, hey, well, this is great. We got a little bit of food. We got some beer. We're just hanging out. We'll just make a whole day of it. It's like we're having a picnic. This guy will lose interest. And then we'll paddle on back, right?
Quack chance, idiot. I'm the
best. Three questions. First one we know the answer to. You're the one. If somebody has to go for help, it's going to be you, Brian.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's faster, stronger, all that
Second question. Does
notice
Brian
she left off here? Smarter.
Does Bonnie drop hints?
Does like, oh Brian, yeah? And how quickly?
You know, in the kayak, you could probably outrun them.
How soon do you start? So realistically, like we spend all day. Now, first of all, I act like during the day, like we should just relax, have a good time. We got food and drink and plenty of time. But like the whole day, I assume you're just obsessing about the croc. Like that first day, is there any moment that you?
Oh no, there's not a second that he's come into our lives. He's there to stay until he's gone. We're taking watches so we can.
Damn right.
I mean, I'm not closing my eye. Oh my God, no. And here's the thing, though. Although I don't think I would have. I guess they're going to be way faster than you in a kayak. Is that what we're assuming? Is that
way faster?
It turns out crocodiles pretty good swimmers. I don't know if you knew this.
Yeah, but I mean, you think you can get
they
a pretty
adapted
good clip
to the water?
Well, okay. So at what point?
Now let me ask you guys this though.
Yeah.
Because you're on vacation, you're in Australia. If this were a actual thing that were to happen.
Right.
The girls would be left at your parents' house or something. You'd probably be in contact with them whenever. Like, you guys on this island, it's not just you guys surviving on the island. It's also you guys completely out of contact with everybody else. You know, there are other elements to this beyond just you guys surviving.
Yeah, so it's like...
I would think there'd be search parties because we wouldn't be just out there.
Oh, we would be
kind of
spoiled.
I mean, we would be there. The only way...
Oh, yeah, you're rescued. Sorry, scenario over. Next thing.
No,
that's not how this is played.
I know, but there's a little bit that goes into this because I would never go
overestimating
into
the local government. I mean, I'm a goddamn crocodile, and I know that.
You're underestimating my mother.
Good point.
We would be found.
It was a surprise trip.
That's right. I wanted to surprise you. So now, okay. Oh. So which is greater, Bonnie? Your terror of the crocodile, or your desire, or your confidence in me? Are you so scared of the croc that you're the one who says no? Let's just wait another day. Or are you the one who's like, I want out of this situation so bad that I just want you to go for it?
I guarantee you, if I went on a kayak thing with Brian, we'd be underprepared, and we'd have like one Chico stick with us, and that would be it.
What's
like,
what's a Chico stick?
It's like this peanut butter thing. So I'd be eating peanut butter because I wouldn't have the kids with me. Okay. So it was like we'd have like one like candy
where you can also buy pantsuits and blouses.
Right.
So I want to know which is going to happen first. Brian's going to be like, well, I guess I'm going to go for it.
I would not have sat there for 2 weeks.
I know what would happen. First, Brian would be like, well, there's a crocodile. I'm just saying it's just me and you, deserted island. And he's going to be making a play.
I'm going to be like, you ever boned in front of a crocodile?
This just keeps getting better.
I am sorry. That's the first thing that has to happen before we can get moved on.
Exactly. You get the feeling that this might be your send off, your last, your, well, I may never have a chance with my husband again. So I'm going to start nagging him to hell.
Let's go out with a bang, sweetheart. So I'll tell you this much, like for sure, there's no way I would sit there for two full weeks. So it's been there nonstop for 2 full weeks.
Yeah, but the longer you wait,
There's a logistical element because Bonnie, even if you really, really wanted a resolution to this, like you sending Brian out means that there is a chance that Brian is
a very probability, right?
And I kind of feel like if you guys went, you would kind of have to go together.
Yeah.
No way.
Well, I couldn't. I
would
do that.
I couldn't.
Not
do
with
that.
Children on the line, because like.
Well, I don't. What?
No. On the line, and she'd be like, fine, I think I missed my period.
No, I can't understand why. Like, I mean, I would want one parent at least to survive.
Well, it's, okay, so it's going to be
me. You've decided which one that is already.
I was going to say, right. One parent sounds a lot like me.
No, but here's the thing,
but
actually.
But the thing is, like, you would.
We should both go, and we should separate, because you can't get both of us.
So we're in separate. Kayaks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. We were kayaking separately.
Why can't one of us attack the other one while, you know...
Okay, Bonnie, to put this in perspective, this thing is longer than this entire room is.
Yeah, but he's slow and fat, right?
No, he's a torpedo that's been evolved.
They are killing machines.
He's a living dinosaur evolved to swim faster than his food.
So anytime...
And his food, by the way, are like fish that are designed to swim away.
Oh, man.
Creatures much more adapted to the water than two people from Texas.
Yes. Yeah. So he's swimming nonstop.
Hey,
you
how's
can never
that
catch
triathlon
the...
now,
Like, you can never catch him sleeping or anything? He's just always going?
Well, he might sit out there, but it's not like he, like, took some melatonin and you know he's going to be out for 8 hours.
Well, and that's the other thing.
I'd
like
wait
the,
for
like...
him to eat. What, then that, he would be full.
You would,
he's waiting to eat.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Oh, man.
See, that's the other thing, too, is he could go a lot longer without food because that's, you know, they eat giant, you know, meals and then lay around, take it forever to digest.
Yeah.
Wait, so do we decide?
There's only one crocodile. Yeah. It's not like a bunch of crocodiles.
So you guys are both under the assumption that at some point, Brian, you make a run for it.
Yeah.
And Bonnie stays on the island.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I I'll tell you what, man, I don't even know. Okay, you would, I guess this croc, see, maybe we'd have an advantage because there's two of us. If we had two boats, then because my guess is this guy walked around the island. Trying to, you know, find a place to drop in, and the croc just patiently followed him. What's that?
Oh, so they don't come out of the water until you're...
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess.
Well, they can charge land.
Yeah, they can. They can outrun a deer in short distances.
Yeah.
Man.
Faster than a deer.
What's that? What? I could have sworn I heard that about alligators, at least.
Yeah.
They're fast.
Yeah. So anyway, I die, and now in real life here in Texas, I'm now terrified of crocodiles because I sat here and wrapped my mind around
this. Oh, but then I would be able to go because he has a big meal. So then I would go.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So,
proceed.
So maybe that's the maybe the trick is to, for me to not even bother with the boat. But instead, you're like, Brian, just swim right up and say hello to the croc.
And it says, you don't have to be faster than the crocodile, just faster than the slowest person in your party.
So one of us does get off. We could either...
one of us gets
Apparently,
off.
Apparently, Brian's been trying to get off exactly. since the moment they got on the island.
And then he gets eaten.
I like the idea of us actually fashioning weapons out of the material.
You kill an 18-foot crocodile if you had like assault weapons.
Bonnie's like weaving palm fronds into like a noose, and she's like, "While you were sleeping, we can hang him with this, or maybe just threaten him with it."
Games to murdering this crocodile.
I out of curiosity, I wonder, like, well, how fast can a crocodile swim?
Yeah,
at 20 miles per hour.
Wow.
Which is hella faster than you're going to kayak.
That's faster than, most.
I don't think so.
That's fast enough to wakeboard.
If Bonnie and Brian each depart an island in opposite directions on a kayak at 8 miles per hour, how long before the crocodile eats them?
Yeah,
how long can he go? I guess all
can
day.
Can I say, like,
he can go 20 miles per
Here's
hour
the thing, is
all day.
On the page that I saw this, I will send you the link if you choose. The warning is, they did not warn me, is I see a hand, and I pull down, and I see that hand's holding another hand. And then I see below that the other hand ends at the elbow. And below that, I see a cut open crocodile.
All right.
Link?
I'll tell you what. Now that I'm realizing how desperate it is, I think we would maybe wait a week. And then at the end of the week, I would just swim out and get eaten and hope you would paddle off.
I think that you are discounting how rational this guy's decision was.
You think, like, he was just too scared to it, like?
No, like, I think he was like the move to do. Like, you know, like you take your chances at getting rescued and trying to like make bonfires or whatever, like to signal, you know, stuff that's going overhead. Because apparently, like, it wasn't like a completely deserted area. It wasn't like he was in the on the lost island or anything.
Wait,
you know,
maybe scared of fire? Could you?
Well,
like,
you'd have to make a fire. We don't have.
You don't think you can make a fire?
I can't make a fire.
We don't have a fire for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We go out into nature without even a magnifying glass. You've started fires when I'm around without thermite.
It's like, great. You create a fire on the island.
Okay.
Delightful. The crocodile's out there in the water going, okay.
Like, that's awesome. I don't think I've seen that before.
We have nothing but time. We get creative. We make a little boat that carries fire in a surrounding ring around us. I'm totally getting crafty up in this, you know?
I just saw this photo.
You don't want to mess with crafty Bonnie.
All right, did you send it to... All right, hold on.
Oh!
Did you send it to me, too?
Oh, mother of pearl.
I don't want to see it. I'm going to have bad
dreams.
Brian,
which handed are you?
What's that?
What handed are you? Right-handed?
I'm right-handed.
Right.
You're like, not anymore.
Oh, come on. You don't think a ring of fire would scare him off? Your
fire boat.
Calm down,
Johnny Cash. It's a crocodile. It's evolved to murder you.
Yeah, but like, he doesn't want us barbecued. He wants us raw.
I don't think he's in the least bit intimidated by whatever fire boat.
You you don't think we can fashion like spikes underneath us that are...
He's in the water, Bonnie. What is this?
No, there's like a protective.
Bonnie, he doesn't fear a boy named Sue either.
She's thinking like we attach spikes all over.
Yeah, we get
the
a really
boat.
Wicked.
Let's write
metal
a sign. No
kayak.
Crocodiles allowed.
We're all like got death metal blaring. We're like, watch out.
Bonnie's on to like by the second week. She's like, let's pass a resolution and make it illegal for this crocodile to eat us.
Like, right. I like that. And she's like, we got death metal. We got this. And like, you walk over and you see an Amazon box. Like, Bonnie, what's this?
You're
like, well, I have my phone service. I've been ordering.
Don't be mad. It was extra to deliver to the island.
It's like Amazon's a new Acme company.
FedEx guy did not want to stay here. He was off in a hurry. He like just what?
We could have fed him to the crocodile.
Oh my god! I still want that picture. Send me that picture.
Ew.
I emailed it to you.
You emailed it. Yeah, Bonnie.
So it's resolved. We got maybe 4 hours. You guys said you're going to make love first, so you're on the island for 12 minutes
before
sent out on the kayak.
All right. Well, there's a picture of an alligator. Oh, dear. There's that. Oh, my God.
Give him a hand, ladies and gentlemen.
Although alligator meat does look good. All right, I'm going to show the picture. Graphic images incoming in 3, 2, now.
Wait, are there any vulnerable spots? Achilles' heel to the
yes, his
crocodile?
Ego. If you could take him down a peg, it really ruins him. Yeah. Wow.
So that was horrifying.
So gross. I didn't even see that.
Sorry, bro.
No. Apparently, the Achilles' heel is to be a chain smoking, carny looking individual who works at the Miccosukee resorts in Florida that definitely deal with these creatures.
Oh. Have you ever seen any of those alligator shows live?
Oh hell yeah, man! You grew up in Florida, right next to the Everglades. You are going on at least 3 to 5 school trips to the.
The only way you can get middle school, you pass middle school phys ed, is you have to turn an alligator over and put it to sleep.
Yeah, exactly. That's a Florida specific element of the ACT.
Oh man, 18 feet! I'm trying to wrap my mind around
that's
that.
That's crazy. That's crazy big.
This ad here is brought to you by somebody who writes, recently I was laid off about a third of my work, but that's a good thing as I have plenty of time now to try my hand at the wonderful world of new media with my YouTube Let's Play channel, Stuffedy Plays. All right, that is Stuffedy Plays. That's Stuff, Edy, Plays. Beginning with Beneath a Steel Sky, The Unfair Platformer, and Thomas Was Alone, with more to come. Then have support, there can be more shows in the future. Go to YouTube and search Stuff Edy Plays right now. Let's play with Stuffity.
All right, what else you got for us, Andrew?
I've got quite a lot of stuff, if you care to know. I'm actually doing a search because I think I made a list earlier that I want to see if I can find. And because I think we had another one. But let me pull up another fun thing. Side note, fun fact, and by the end of this month, SpaceX, or early within the next month, within 30 days, it is planned for SpaceX to try their first launch at the Vandenberg Air Force Base out here in California, right? The lifting, the first stage is going to be the Falcon R, whatever. It's a Falcon 9 R, and the R stands for anybody?
Reusable?
Reusable.
No so kidding.
It's going to be a first stage, and the plan is they have a satellite they're going to try to ship up, send up there, and when the first stage detaches, they want to do a powered descent into the ocean to see all this grasshopper tests you've been seeing where they've been flying the rocket off, and that is to lead up to this where they can then they want to see if they can do a controlled reburn and have it come back and land in the ocean at first, you know, so it may not work at all, but that's the plan, and so they postponed a couple times, but kind of exciting, guys. We may see, that if this happens, this is the first controlled landing or first controlled descent of a first stage ever, which leads the way to reusable.
So, okay, so the how high up is it going? It's going all the way into orbit or?
No, first stage goes up, I don't know how high. I mean, like first stage, I think is like a couple 100,000 feet.
Okay, but as far as it would go if it was sending a payload.
It is. It is.
It will. Okay. Yeah, no, it's going to put a satellite up there.
Oh, that's amazing. That is so huge. And for folks who are new to the program, the statistic that Andrew came up with that lodged in my brain is the fact that that you hit a point with a reusable three-stage rocket, if you're able to recover all three parts and reuse them, that the fuel expense becomes equivalent to flying, you said, was it a 737 around the world?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, which in space terms is ridiculously dirt cheap. It is amazing.
So there we go. It's a real shame that there's nothing interesting going on in space technology.
Yeah, it's
shame
dead.
We quit dreaming, man. That's
are you digging on the like NASA weepy eyed? You know, we lost our. Are you taking a dig at Neil deGrasse Tyson?
No, listen, they're all really smart and smarter than me. I'm just saying it's a real shame that there's no progress going on in space and that, you know, there's that like it's a completely stagnant thing. It's just a real, real, real shame.
Yeah. Who? Shots fired, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Boom, boom, boom.
I have several things here. Do you want to go? We could go Psy medicine.
Wait, we could go, what kind of medicine?
Medicine stuff. We could go. What else do we have? Let me pull up my other list. What did I have? Oh, you know, it's kind of cool. Like, so Google announced last week Calico.
Yes, the live forever thing, right?
They're going to infest Palo Alto with cats just because they can. They're like, we have unlimited money. We're going to buy a million calico cats and just set them loose.
So the interesting thing about the announcement for Calico, and this is the deal where it's like they want to a couple of the targets that they said was they said, like, look, everyone wants us to cure cancer. We don't think that's a good investment because when you die of cancer, you are usually about 3 years away from dying of something else. You know, so we're not going to focus on curing cancer. We're going to focus on long-term strategies so that somebody who is under 20 today could live 100 extra years beyond their current expected lifespan, which, like, that's amazing.
The problem is that Matt Ridley has an article. It's behind a paywall right now, so I only read the first paragraph. I think it'll be up on the Rational Optimist soon. And he points out that, like, they just had, like, another, like, you know, one of the world's oldest man died, you know, which is, you talk about a depressing club to be in. You know, when you're the world's oldest, they're like, well, how long, you know, like, every day there's a phone call. Is he breathing? But he died at, like, 116. There's, like, nobody's ever lived past that we can document.
Right.
And so 116 seems to be, like, the ceiling for natural. Actually, it is now up on his website. Why are there so few people over 115 years of age? And so I think he goes into it and just explains, like, you reach this point where you just – nobody – nobody's 150, not 160. Yeah. There's just this point where it's like, boom, you're done. And so what's exciting, like, so Google has announced that, you know, obviously you got a bunch of billionaires kind of concerned with the idea that, hey, they're getting old, you know? And investing tons of money and resources into approaching longevity and medicine. And there is a very new way of looking at things. One of the things that we think about medicine has still been largely dogmatic. You have research trying to find new drugs, but the reason we try to investigate these things is almost just purely random. And what Google's hoping to do is, you know, these guys built one of the most impressive computer system ever existed. And now they want to say, how can we apply what we know about information and looking at information and finding things out? And, you know, when we didn't realize that ulcers were caused by bacteria until, like, the 1980s, and these observations that just if you had a large enough data set, you could then have computational tools look at it and go, but wait a minute. So it's a fascinating idea that you've got this company that's just, you know, the thing that we know for all this amazing technology is like, and we want to help you live longer.
Yeah, well,
the only problem is they're going to make you access it through Google Plus.
Yes, they found a way to get you on Google Plus.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember where I read the article, but the gist of it was that it's crazy to see all of these still relatively young billionaires, you know, and we'll say in their 50s or whatever, who feel gypped by the promises of what the future was supposed to have for them. And then they get there and there's no flying cars or self-driving cars or, you know, or they still haven't cured cancer or whatever. And because they have the means, they're able to just just decide, screw it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make the future that I wanted, and I'm going to get started right now. Like, especially the space flight thing, the fact that you can't just buy a ticket to go into space, which is part of what's so, you know, is freaking exciting about the, you know, that's why we're obsessed with SpaceX.
And, you know, you think what's, and you start getting into, if you look at, I haven't heard the statistic, but I'm going to make this up, and I'm sure it's probably true. You could probably measure Bill Gates' effect on Africa and how it's affected life expectancy.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and to think that one human being, one guy that we vilified for the longest time in, maybe sometimes rightfully so, but that his, who has this, was this deep down extreme humanitarian who, through his efforts, through the, him deciding what to do, you read books about him in the 90s and he wasn't known for giving away to charity, but they talked about how he was reading lots of books on viruses and medical problems and tried to figure out what can he put money towards and solve. And now through the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, they have had a measured impact in Africa, and they probably increased life expectancy there.
And it was such a nerd way to approach it too, where he's just like, you know, I have a large amount of resources. What is the in the entire world, where can the greatest impact be made for the least amount of money? And not that he wanted to spend the least amount of money, but he wanted to, by the numbers, do the most good. And that there's an objective, you know, we have the social science to be able to say that, you know, that a little bit of DDT here goes a long way to cure, you know, to preventing malaria.
I thought it was really interesting.
You know, the Google guys who've done, you know, these guys, they make a car that drives itself. You know, they make, you know, computers we talk to and this stuff, and I'm going to think there's going to be a measurable impact. Is it going to extend the ultimate life expectancy? I don't know. Is it going to have a measured effect on the quality of life up until then? I would think that's very likely so. So,
yeah, I think it's just rad that there are really smart, intelligent, rich people making this a priority, like and in a inventive, disruptive kind of way, in the way that Google likes to do stuff. And that's like the entire history of their company is looking at something that's been done a certain way and trying to do it radically different in a way that is beneficial toward humanity.
So how much of how
and serve AdWords?
Well, and that's just it is like, let's face it, at the core of everything, Google is an advertising company. And the more of these crazy, outrageous side projects, you know, whether it's Google Plus or the self-driving cars or Google Fiber or their crazy Google balloon thing that they're doing now, like those are moonshot projects that don't make any money in the short term. And it's like, what's your game, Google? Like, why aren't you guys making money?
You know, in that In the Plex book, they make the argument, or Stephen Levy makes the argument, and the people that he talks to, that, you know, AdWords was just an element of a moonshot, mm-hmm. you know, and Google views themselves as like, this is how they make their money now. And obviously there is a lot of care that needs to go into making sure that that golden goose keeps laying eggs. But, you know, I think internally and philosophically, they kind of feel like that they can do any number of things. And the financial flexibility that they have gives them the opportunity to put the brain power and the, you know, resources behind it.
And let me, and I think a lot of it, I think that, you know, at heart, they don't really want to kind of admit the fact they're guys selling advertising for admin, but, and so I'm sure there's a lot of recontextualizing what they do and how they see themselves. And you look at, you know, the problem that Google has, and let's say Apple has this problem where Apple's biggest company in the world right now. And people go, okay, how many more people are there that can buy iPhones?
Right.
And it's like, well, they're going to run out of people very quickly. That's a problem Facebook has, is that mm-hmm. you either hope, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, the idea that corporate America wants people to be poor is not true. You want people to be prosperous so you can sell them more crap.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and
that's there's a profit motive in the Calico project where it's like, you know, they want you to live longer so you'll buy more crap. The yeah. more usable years of creative energies we get, then that's, you know, that's
absolutely, you know,
yeah, but
more AdWords.
Well, we,
you know, GM and, you know, GM, American, you know, airlines, all these companies, they want people prosperous enough to be able to buy their product, and the more the better, and that's where growth comes from. Facebook, you know, the problem Facebook has is they've got the first billion people on the planet signed up. The next billion are a
trying
third
to have food.
Healthy,
yeah.
You know? Every time you go further, they get poorer and poorer and poorer, which yeah. is great to bring them on board. But as far as somebody who's trying to the business of selling advertising, that's not as attractive, but you hope that they have prosperity and the increase. And it's like, yeah, Calico, like you said, nailed it, Brian. If we live longer, then we don't have to create so many new Google, you know, because the problem we have too is population growth is declining. New York Times finally realized this, is that, holy crap, we're not having as many kids. And who's going to support us in our old age?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like you've read the stories about, you know, all the robots helping out the elderly in Japan, right? Yeah.
And you're actually in China, aren't you? You have to, like, it's legal.
Oh yeah, did you guys hear about this? So you know, China creates this one child per family policy back in the early 80s, 70s, whenever. And then now they have the smaller support structure. You have this aging population, and they sort of use the brute force hammer of law to limit the population to begin with. Now you have this lopsided, inverted pyramid and this aging population, and so their solution is to again use the hammer of law of like, now you have to take care of the old people. That's a law too. Done.
Yeah.
And so now it's like mandatory with Nana.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like you, literally you have to check in and
why don't they you come audit. Over and change my sheets or I'll call the cops.
Oh my God. If my grandmother had had that power before she passed away, oh Lord, I would be like, I'd be like in like, you know, like the deadbeat dad court, you know,
deadbeat sons.
I'd like listen, anything except don't show me your Lady Di spoon collection again. Okay.
Now, you know, you guys are talking about the wacky projects, but, Penny is in GT and they're using
GT?
That. Oh, Gifted and Talented program. It's the
the accelerated the
and, no, it's not, gifted not and talented.
Yeah, I was gonna say
and or attractive. That's GTA. Gifted, talented, and attractive. She's in her fifth year of it, so she's really into GTA 5.
I liked it, Brian.
Thank
I
you.
Giggled.
That's it. That's okay. The crocodile liked it, Bonnie. Come on.
I gotcha.
It was a good joke.
You don't appreciate your husband's humor sometimes.
Sometimes.
You really got to give him a little bit more leeway on this.
He's a much better swimmer than you realize.
You never mind. I'm swimming out and getting gobbled up myself.
But anyway, Penny's in GT and what?
Oh, but a big part of the, or a 20% of the curriculum is for them to do whatever kind of wacky project they want. It's self-paced.
Self-directed.
Self-directed. It has to involve research. It has to have something that is produced that can be shared with the world. It's
What's she going to do?
Well, that was so funny because I really had a hard time with her first
Panda
choice.
Save.
She's what?
Is what?
It PandaSave.com?
Yeah, well, I mean, that would that would totally be, you know, something that she could do. But her thing, she came home and I'm like really excited because I'm like, she comes up with all these great ideas ever since she could start talking. I mean, we've been basically doing these projects and I'm like, yay, somebody else can help her do it because I feel like I've done as
you're
much.
Like, you're like, I don't have to follow any of these crazy ideas anymore.
No, it's just I would like somebody else to kind of help direct her and get that, you know, that.
So what is it? Boost. You're killing us.
She comes home and she bursts through the door. She's like, I'm going to do time-lapse photos of a plant growing.
See, now you think that's terrible. I mean, she's in fourth grade. I think they could come out pretty good.
I didn't know what that was when I was 9.
I don't know. I just felt like it was so lazy. And you know what? I was
lazy.
Right.
All right. You're like, I mean, she just wants to do a self-directed project over a series of weeks using high-end photography made into a movie.
Now, Bonnie? I mean, this is not like, hey, I'm going to glue some macaroni to a plate tonight. You know, this is... Yeah. This is serious.
No, I'm not
even kidding.
Dry macaroni, guys. Learn from my mistakes. Dry macaroni.
All right.
If you put $500 at the end of me taking a picture of a plant at the same time every single day for 3 weeks, I don't think I would get to the end of it.
Right. Well, my thing, and I was completely right. I said, well, what was your motivation? And she says, I just wanted it to be fun and not any research. And so
it was lazy.
It was like, I knew, like, of all the things. And so she was really hoping. And I'm like, no, it has to have research. So if you're going to take pictures of a plant, you're going to have to learn about growing plants and doing and maybe photography and then blah, blah, blah. So,
well, maybe I'll try to. Like, is she already decided on this, or
no,
is there still time to pitch?
No, and the problem is, like, I totally, like, my face just said it all. Like, I was like, you lazy, all over my face, and then I kind of, like, screwed it, and I'm like, oh, and I talked to the teacher, and she calmed me down. She's like, hey, it's cool. We can make this work.
By the way, if you're going to spend all this time learning about growing plants, there are a few kind of plants that would be really great if Mom and Daddy had no legal connection to. And just found growing in the backyard.
There's some new business opportunities on the horizon in the next 10, 20 years that she could take advantage of.
Oh,
this is the
goodness.
Beginning of Penny's own Breaking Bad story.
No, she wants to, her other idea, she goes, well, I thought about mazes with the guinea pigs and writing a novel.
Oh, that's a spectrum.
And she wants to make first contacts. So there's a lot, you know, so maybe we ought to start small with the plant.
So is that a yes? You're going through with the plant thing?
Yeah. This is a conversation for tomorrow.
Okay. Right.
Oh, my God, Brian.
I'm going to have to buy a GoPro, aren't I?
Huh? Prank your daughter?
What?
You want to prank your daughter?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
What? What?
Get some of the same plants and have like different growth spurts and see if you can make it go.
I go like
start crafting stuff on there.
By the way, I think Penny would sniff that out in
a minute.
A day. On the first switch, I think that she calls BS on that. Is it? That's a different plant, Daddy.
Maybe you could, Brian, maybe you can do something subtle, like on the leaf, like draw something that moves around or something you only see when you watch in fast motion, like a face, like your face appears on the leaf.
I like it. We could do that.
All right, listen, folks, we've been gone for a long time, and it's not a secret that sometimes it's a bit weird. So we have this spot. And it came in on June 13th, 2013. It's from Rodney Young. All right. So Rodney Young wrote, "We are close to the merging of mind, man, machine, and the pioneers of the space industry have already begun. So where does all of this take us in the year 2045? The adventure begins Saturday, June 15th. And that's all that it says. So I looked up online, and apparently there was the Global Future 2014 Congress on Saturday, June 15, 2013, at the Lincoln Center in New York. I don't know whether that's what he wanted to talk about, but we're talking about it now. And Rodney, if you want another spot, just email me, justinrobertyoung@gmail.com.
Hey, you don't, can we do picks? I've been so excited because I've read so many books. Man, this is how far back it goes. Did I tell you guys about Incognito? I can't remember how long it's been. I want to say that I read it just a couple months ago, so probably it was before our hiatus.
I've not heard you talk about it on the show.
So yeah. Incognito is a book about brain science and the way brains work. And one of the interesting cases that it makes is that what we perceive as consciousness, we think of ourselves as the us. Our consciousness is driving everything, and you know, brain's just machinery. But it says no. The science seems to indicate that what we perceive as consciousness is essentially a child king, where it's like the child king thinks it's making decisions, but it's, you know, it's the chancellor, it's the master of coin, it's the people in charge of shipping and receiving and distribution or whatever. They're all running stuff, but the king thinks he's in charge. And so it has all of this amazing, fascinating research that seems to indicate that when we take credit for a decision, what's actually happening is that your brain's made up of these warring factions. They all have the goal of wanting what's best for, you know, the body as a whole, but they have very different ways that they want to accomplish it. Some, you know, just want to, you know, like the more animalian parts of the brain want to just smash and punch things. Other parts want to reason and work stuff out. The book likens it to like houses of parliament or Congress, where it's like you have Democrats or Republicans or whatever. And the only way anything gets decided in Congress is if it's so obviously good for the country that both warring factions can agree on it. And then a decision is made and it actually goes through. The same thing happens in your brain. You reach these moments of consensus where different parts of your brain want to do different things. So like literally when you find yourself arguing with yourself, you are literally arguing with yourself. You are experiencing different impulses from your brain wanting to do stuff. And likewise, when there's certain brain injuries, for example, there is certain forms of epilepsy that are so severe that for a young enough child, they will recommend a hemispherectomy, where they full on open up your skull and remove fully one half of your brain And the kids, these kids, like there's nothing else, but just, I don't know if they throw like, you know, cotton tissue in there or something, but these kids grow on, they grow up, they learn math and science. They have relationships, they have full lives. But it's just a case where it's like lightning struck all the Democrats and now the Republicans are in charge, or vice versa, where it's like the brain has these redundant systems that can act completely independently. It totally blew my mind.
Yeah, I'm just looking this up. It's by David Eagleman. I know David, actually.
No kidding. That's awesome.
Yeah, I have a couple interesting Eagleman stories I'll share with you at some point. But he did a thing on like a while back about like our perception of time and like in an accident. Just time stretch out or whatever. And I'm curious about this because, like, yeah, I'd love to read, like, if, like, Daniel Dennett or somebody like that has done sort of an analysis. Because, like, there was a lot of that research about how after the fact we rationalize, like, which button did you press? Why did you press it, et cetera? But my – and, again, I have not read this. So my question is – I mean, at base level, it's a bunch of neurons that are doing functions. So it is absolutely reducible to these different sub-processes. I don't have a problem with that. But it was like – I remember that a lot of those things, they say like, oh, we can predict which choice you're going to make in here. And it's like, well, as magicians, we know this. Like, you know, I just, you know, like, you know, you look at, you know, Brian, you did this, you did this amazing research project of what cards people choose.
Right.
And realized you had this amazing, I mean, unwittingly, but you did this great. I mean, it was like, you look at this and you have the best data set ever of anybody on what cards people would choose.
Wow,
you
know? I didn't even think about it that way. Yeah.
Man, that's amazing. I hadn't thought about that. Wow, you're so smart, Brian. I mean, Andrew, I mean.
So you look at that. And you're
keep
like,
complimenting him.
Brian did that magic trick where it was like, you have people like name a card and they did YouTube videos and all that. You found this big peak of what people most often choose, you know, these cards, and you realize that we follow patterns very, very much. And my problem with some of these studies they do, and they say we can see what's going to happen before, is I don't know how much a lot of times the researchers are aware of the proclivity towards making I will always tend to go this, you know, put a coin in somebody's hand, we know which hand it's going to be, put a coin in a hand, you can tell where it does. There's a lot of these things that, yeah, I'm not going to think about it. I will make the same choice. We'll all make that. But then there are other kinds of decision-making where you do have to think and you do have to do that. And if you're right 80% of the time, but you're always going to be wrong 20%, and we can never account for that 20% when we can't predict it, that's the ghost in the machine. And I don't think there's a ghost in the machine, but I think there's a layer of complexity there that gets interesting.
Yes. Well, and there's the book is less about, you know, predictive behavior, but more, for example, one of the studies that they'll do is there's a brain disease that or you can have a disease. Let's see, how do they do it? It talked about the rationalization of behavior. There's a syndrome where somebody can be like, for example, paralyzed on their whole left side, and never be able to recognize it consciously or see it. Like they will do things. They will rationalize behavior. For example, they'll say, hey, do me a favor, mime as though you're driving, hold your hands up like you're holding a steering wheel. And they're like, fine, I'm doing it. And then they're like, are both your hands up? You're like, yes, of course it is. Because I'm fine. And then you're like, well, if you look on the monitor, your left hand is down. And then they're like, nah, that's weird. They're like, well, let's do it again. And then they're like, I don't feel like it. I don't want to do this test. And it's like they'll skip it and they'll lose it. There was one Supreme Court justice who was paralyzed in his legs. But yet he refused to admit it. He said that he's claimed to have been kicking field goals the other day, and he truly believed it. It was not an act. It was not a lie.
And that gets into pathology. Now, can you? What was the hemisphere example in the concept you mentioned before about the brain hemispheres?
Say that again.
You were saying something, an example about people with the brain hemispheres or some.
There are children who have epilepsy. Now, you know, normally what they'll do for epilepsy is they might sever their corpus callosum, the two sides on there. But in some places, it's so bad that they will literally remove half of the entire brain, and the kid will just grow up with half a brain.
And I, you know, there was some research into that, and there were stories, there was like anecdotal stories of a guy and the ones with half brain, they lose tremendous amount of functionality though.
Yeah.
And there was a story, there was one story like, well, there is this person who only has half of a hemisphere and they're tremendously functional. Turned out, and Eagleman was a smart guy, but that made it into some of the literature. They talked about it, but it turned out what the case was is they had hydrocephaly when they were young. And so they had, and what happened is they had the other hemisphere of the brain, but there was such a swelling of the brain the layers were all compressed down into a much smaller area. So they still had the neuron density and all these other things, but it wasn't like they had half a brain. They had two brains, but one was under a different impact. But the upside, yeah, where they remove it, it's like, yeah, it's curious. It is like that. You know, I always think that it's like you draw a circle around you, and however you come to these things, whatever process arrives at it, that's you. You know, and yes. Whether or not I you know, the idea that I'm, you know, rationalizing these things after the fact. It's still happening.
But like, for example, reading this book, it made me notice little moments. Like the fact that right now I'm having a conversation with you guys, and yet, you know, I can tie a tie while talking. And it's like, you know, the child king is engaged in this discourse and is mm-hmm. while other parts of the brain, you can almost feel it and see it. It's just I loved it. And I encourage everyone to read Incognito. It really opened my eyes about a lot of that stuff. And it's not, you know, it's not heavy handed or saying that you're, you know, we're, you know, deterministic or anything. It just sort of gives you a wider view of the way your consciousness works.
Eagleman wrote another book, a kind of a fun book called Sum. And it was all of his ideas of like what heaven could be like.
Oh, that's cool.
It's the fun, like each one little quick page, like, and then there's this, it's y'all eat ice cream all day or whatever like this. He's also, I think, a Texan too. But there's an interesting thing that Marvin Minsky said once, and Marvin Minsky, kind of one of the modern fathers of artificial intelligence and all that, because I'd asked him, and a theory that's come back kind of big is like the whole idea of, or big, some people now is like, oh, is the brain have some sort of quantum properties going on? And there are molecules in our brain. There's things like rhodopsin, which is a protein, which could be influenced by quantum events, whatever. And there's mechanisms to do this. And now we're realizing things like its smell and all that may be partially quantum properties. But there's this one to sort of incorporate this very exotic, wonderful theory to explain for our behavior. But Marvin Minsky made out something that was sort of, I thought was very interesting, is that, you know, you can have pseudo random numbers. You can come up with pseudo random that are just, so it's like really complex, you know, cryptography or stuff. You can come up with stuff that is so complex that as far as the universe knows, it's random. It's mm-hmm. totally random. And there's processes in the brain are like that. And you could say, well, it's deterministic, but you could never prove that it was deterministic.
Well, and also to me, it like whether it happened because of a cosmic coin flip or because of Newtonian physics, it still takes it out of your hands. And it's like, I don't know, like when you think about, like, you know, is free will an illusion? And if you decide it is, but then you learn like, oh, well, quantum's truly random. It to me, that's not a solution. That doesn't make it suddenly like, oh, good, so it's totally random. You know, it's like random isn't better than deterministic for me, because both of those don't involve me.
I guess the reason that my personal bias is like, well, I like the idea of knowing that it, as far as in this universe, it's non-deterministic, is the idea that we are inherently individual and that you could build the most complex computer in the world and it can create a version of you now, but that version is going to be its own different personality and you are ultimately unique.
Truly unique.
And that's what I like, is the idea that we are unique. And no matter how things progress, we could make a copy, but that copy immediately becomes unique. And the idea that things that you will not be able to predict everything I do or everything you're going to do. And that to me kind of gives me sort of value.
Yeah, why I can see that. That's a different aspect than I was concerned with. Anyway.
Picks. Bonnie. That was your pick. Who's
Justin.
Next?
Justin, Bonnie.
Why don't you go, Andrew?
So I have a pick. It's a movie. And the script was written by an author who wrote a number of books that became very, very influential about a lot of genre that we talk about today and characters we're very familiar with. The director is an extremely well-known director. This was a movie I had not even heard of up until like 3 days ago. All right. It's called LA 2017, and it's about a guy travels forward into the future into the year 2017. Brian, let me tell you about it first.
All right.
I'm not going.
Oh wait.
You're so
about a guy.
No, I'm not.
I travels into the future, the year 2017, and Earth has been beset by all these ecological disasters, and everybody's living underground in Los Angeles. Population's dramatically reduced. It's this weird corporate fascist society. Favorite line was, there's reported sightings of a Negro in Cleveland, you know. And so the idea that they're racist, apparently, too. 2017 was a standalone episode of a series called The Name of the Game, which was a series from like the late 60s, early 70s, which is about this magazine. And they had every episode would be like about one of three characters. One guy was a crime reporter who was like doing mafia investigations. One guy was the head of the magazine, Howard Publications, and he's this kind of Hugh Hefner-esque kind of guy. And then there's another character. So each week you might have a different story involving one of those guys loosely tied into the auspices of them working for the magazine. This episode involved the head of the magazine going into, you know, him blacking out, waking up in the future, directed by a young Steven Spielberg.
What?
22-year-old Steven Spielberg directed this episode. It's like a TV movie that was part of this other series called Name of the Game. And it's very similar. You watch this and you see, like, this is the same year. It's like 1971. Same year THX 1138 came out after Lucas had done a student film. But there's a THX element to it, this underground tunnels and stuff. It's on YouTube, serialized. So it's called LA 2017. The script was written by a guy by the name of Philip Wiley. And to some people, we'll know exactly who Philip Wiley was. Philip Wiley wrote a novel back in the early, like, in the early 1930s called Gladiator, which was what Simon and Schuster borrowed heavily from to create Superman, okay? He also wrote a book that became very much, people believe, was the influence for Doc Savage. And Wiley wrote a number of books that became very influential in genre. You look up Philip Wiley, and so, like, you know, Superman characters are called a Wiley because they're based off that prototype. So anyhow, I watched the whole thing through. I was actually engaged. And this was directing this episode. We know people knows about like the Night Gallery episode Spielberg did, but this was the episode that opened things up for Spielberg to then go do Duel and then do Jaws and do all of that. And those opening credits are like just awesome.
Dude, they're 70s so as 70s. Hell. Yeah, I love it, man.
So
yeah, the name of the game.
I read biographies on Spielberg. You know, I've watched interviews with this guy. I thought I knew everything about this guy, and then I just hear this mention of like I knew he, like oh he did some TV, and then find out he directed this standalone episode of The Name Game, which is a mini television movie. That's another movie that you would put in the Spielberg au revoir.
That's awesome. All right, so I'm totally. And does it hold up, or do you enjoy it just as an artifact of?
It actually is a sci-fi kind of story, is like a kind of a Twilight Zone-y kind. It really did hold up. I watched it. I had to go do something. I came back home. I'm like, I want to watch the rest of this.
That's awesome.
It's again Philip Wiley, the guy that wrote it. I've read some of his books, and you know he's a guy that I'll give you like. You know, a little bit of a background. I mean, this is the guy that wrote the character that, you know, basically they based Super on. This is a guy that just has created so much interesting content. So he wrote that. He did The Savage Gentleman, which probably influenced Doc Savage. He wrote When Worlds Collide.
That's awesome.
In the movie.
That awesome digital 70s future font.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So good.
I do like that.
There's a great, and I'll tell you, like I recommend this because there's like a great scene where they go to a church, and the church is a computer terminal where you type in your questions.
Oh, that's awesome!
Nice.
It's funny how that stuff, you know, is almost you know prescient. Like nowadays, like what they would express as a church, you know, where you can ask questions and essentially talk to God because it's the all the answers. It's like how quickly have we become spoiled by having the sum total of all human knowledge at our fingertips at all times?
And a funny thing is like he asks a question now that if you type I don't want to spoil it for you, but just,
all right,
it's interesting. Like, and also like part of the ecological collapse that faced, you know, the Earth was, of course, you know, climate change when it got really cold and, you know, the ice caps.
Well, and that was, you know, in their defense, that was what the consensus science was saying in the 70s.
Things were getting really cold.
That's amazing.
So that's it. 2017. It's an episode of the Name of the Game. Starring Gene Barry, who you'll recognize like from some older movies and stuff, but Again, if you like, you know, if you can, and I could put me in the mood for like, man, I want to watch some other early 70s stuff.
I'll tell you, man, 70s was the golden era for science fiction. You had such bold storytelling, and you could do when I read The Master Switch, they talked a lot about the tight controls that over the way you were allowed to make movies and distribution and the type of stories they needed to be. And the 70s was very much an artifact of the breaking down of those rules, when all of a sudden filmmakers, you didn't sell by stars, you sold by artistic visionary directors who were doing bold, outrageous stuff.
You know, it's neat to watch, like, you know, the first time Spielberg kind of got cut loose a little bit and did something. And it's like, because he did this, then I think he did Duel, and then Jaws, and then Close Encounters.
That's insane.
That is amazing.
22. He was 22 when he did this.
Well, I'll tell you what. From a forgotten work of a master, I would like to, as my pick, submit the unpublished works of people that I find really funny. I know Brian's a big fan. It's the Bob and David book, Hollywood Said No. Basically, if you're a fan of Mr. Show with Bob and Dave, the HBO series, they, after that was done, wrote two feature film scripts and a bunch of other sketches. Either of them are Run, Ronnie, Run, the movie that they eventually made, which they personally don't particularly like. But the two films that they wrote were Bob and Dave Make a Movie and Hooray for America. I highly recommend that you get the audiobook, because I think it would be really, really cool to read everything. And in the physical book, you get a bunch of these sketches that show you what they're talking about. In the audiobook, it is a full, basically radio play recording of both scripts and a bunch of the sketches, also read by a lot of the cast, including Brian Posehn and a few of the other guys. So I think it's really, really awesome. Hollywood Said No. I was very, as a Bob and Dave fan, you think that you've reached the end of the internet of them doing the things that they did on that show together, and then just like this little slice of heaven falls into your lap.
That's
it was
awesome.
Delightful.
There's also talk about essentially a Mr. Show reunion of a tour of sorts, where some of the cast getting back together. Which
they've done a couple of those. I saw one a while ago, like maybe close to 10 years ago. But yeah, no. I mean, I'm a massive Bob and David fan. This was great. The other thing I would like to mention, and thanks for my friend Tito for letting me use their offices here at the Upstatement design firm in Boston. He and his girlfriend are currently undergoing a Kickstarter for a thing called a Buka Boot. Basically, it is a lockable bike basket. It has like the, you know, you have like a bike basket with like a lockable mechanism that is as secure as a car trunk. It's weatherproof. It looks awesome. Their Kickstarter is going on right now. You can go to bit.ly/bukaboot, BUCABOOT, all lowercase, and get there now. They're looking for 85,000. I think they're like a third of the way there, 5 days in. So hopefully they hit it. But I think it's super cool. I got one, and it's definitely good people behind it. So go ahead and check it out. Brian's playing the thing here now, the Buka Boot.
Yeah, it looks stylish, but it's basically a way to make your bike a practical way to take more stuff with you.
Well, the idea is, like, you know, you have a lot of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily want to like leave on your bike necessarily.
Yeah.
And like, you know, so it's like if you want to go somewhere and you have like an iPad or a computer or something like that. You know,
you don't want to carry it in, but you can actually.
But you don't want to carry it in. It's something that, like, you can conceivably leave it there. You know, it's locked. It's not going to get rained on. I mean, you have the, you know, your bike getting stolen is, I guess, you know, a worry. But
well, but you know,
that's going to happen no matter what.
Yeah.
Like, this is just a cool solution to that.
What about you, Miss Bonnie? You got any recommendations?
Yeah. Well, I am starting a book called Mindset through a little book club, and it's about the new psychology of success, according to Dweck, I guess, D-W-E-C-K. She's a psychologist. Wait, all right.
Here, let's take a look. Yes. Yeah, Carol Dweck, D-W-E-C-K.
Right. And just started it, a couple of cute quotes, but the one I like best, let me flip over it so I get it right. Here we are. Oh, yeah. So the idea that we can, by changing our mindset, we can, instead of just thinking everything's fixed, oh, I can't, you know, I make excuse, I can't solve this problem. Well, you know, maybe if you thought about yourself in a different way, you could work through some things and become more successful. And we all, and they started off talking about how everybody wants to be the prodigy, or, you know, oh, well, I couldn't play
the star,
violin.
Yeah.
Yeah, the star. I couldn't play violin by the time I was 12 to impress audiences, so I should have, so I gave up, you know.
To be honest, that's kind of the thinking. That's part of why I got into magic when I was like 19 years old, was because I realized, like, oh, it's too late for me to be an awesome violinist. But I'm like, but it seems like all the magicians who are at the top of their game are all old.
Yeah.
So, and you can do magic for a long ass time.
You can evolve. You can keep evolving. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and they say, well, really, this is true for all things we do. But she was talking about the story of the tortoise and the hare, and saying, okay, we know that the story of the tortoise and the hare, what happens. Are you playing with my audio?
No, I'm trying to pull you up. You're not talking into the mic. And so,
oh,
there,
I'm
there
sorry.
There we go. Your level was getting quieter, yes. So I was trying to boost it up.
Okay.
I'm not playing a joke on you.
That's okay. So anyways, she says, in all practicality, I mean, come on. We all wanted to be a less foolish hare. You know, like, nobody wanted to be the tortoise. I mean, who wants to plod along? How unsexy is it to be the tortoise plodding along and then, oh, wow, you won because the hare was stupid.
That's
know?
True.
But I just really like that notion that, you know, we really all do. We want to be that less foolish hare. But what wins the game is... it's just putting your effort into it.
Right on.
I'll tell you what. In that story, I just wanted to be the hare even knowing he lost. Like, the hare seemed like he had, like, such a way better time than the tortoise. The tortoise just kind of like, burr, 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 burr. The hare, like, I don't know. Like, he went out, had fun, partied, you know, like.
That's a good point, too.
Like, it was a great time. And then he lost. It's like, all right, well, whatever. What's a race?
Yeah.
It's to a new podcast Justin's going to be doing for children. It's like, no, kids, let me tell you what the real moral is.
Man, it felt, I don't know about you guys, it felt good. Felt like we did a full lap.
We should do this again sometime, you know?
At some point, sure. So we're back, right? We're back for the time being.
We're back.
Yeah,
baby.
I'm doing some traveling next Monday, but I'll try to figure out a way to do this. But if it's only like the little hiccupy kind of thing, but I'd like to come back and do this again.
No, oh, well, okay.
But he wants to listen to it.
And by the way, thank you to everybody who just did nothing but let us know repeatedly how much you guys missed the show and how much you guys wanted the show back. It is really gratifying.
Like, well, you know, maybe I didn't miss it that much.
it is really amazing whenever anybody, you know, lets you know that, like, they dig your stuff. And there was definitely a steady outcry from many different people that they were, like, ready to hear more weird things.
Did you ever see the Futurama where the dog spent his whole life waiting?
Yeah.
That's how I want to picture our audience.
Oh my gosh.
Bon,
that one
cried.
Made me sad. I didn't like that.
All right. You gotta say
all right.
Andrew.
Well, everybody. It's been weird.
Boom.
Look at that.
Yay. Great way to end the show.